And welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism Audio Show number 45. My name is Brian Schell, and I'm your host for the show. You can find the text as well as all links mentioned in this program and all past episodes on the website at www.dailybuddhism.com. Please send in your questions by email or voicemail. You can send them in to brian@dailybuddhism.com or call them into the voicemail hotline at 937-660-4949, 24 hours a day. Follow me on Twitter at www.twitter.com/dailybuddhism and ask questions there if you'd like. I'm running a little short on questions for next week, so if you have one, now's a great time to send one in.
Hey, Brian, this is Chris calling from Texas, and I wanted to let you know that I really appreciated your latest episode that you've done with explaining the basic tenets of Buddhism in real understandable terms. I plan on sharing this with other members of family and friends just so that they can kind of understand what I believe, and it's really nice to have it all in one place so they don't have to read something. And usually you would find this thing, type of thing in a book or an audio book where you'd have to pay for it. So I really appreciate you doing this, and once again, keep up the good work.
And thank you, Chris, for those kind words. Chris was referring to Podcast 43, wherein I explained the foundations of Buddhism in a nearly hour-long marathon episode. I may release that one as an audiobook someday, but for now it's completely free. Yes, all the Daily Buddhism podcasts are completely free to redistribute to as many people as you want, at no charge, so long as you don't edit them and give away the episode in its entirety. Which brings me to my next announcement. I'm in the need for a new laptop. I need to go with an inexpensive replacement as possible, so I've decided on one of those little $300-ish netbooks. I don't know yet if it's going to be an Acer or an Asus, but I've heard good things about both, and they're similar in cost. As always, money is tight, and the job situation here in Dayton isn't getting any better. I hesitate to do it, but I'm going to throw this idea out there and see where it goes. Two words, fun to drive. So if you've donated in the past, please don't think I'm asking more from you. Thanks for your past support. But if you are one of those folks who said they might send something in someday, or have otherwise intended to send something in but put it off, then now would be a really great time. As always, a donation of $50 or more will get you a free year subscription to the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. But of course, anything will help. Every $5 or $10 counts. No, neither I nor the Daily Buddhism are legally a nonprofit organization, so your gift is just that, a gift. Thank you for your continuing support, and I hope to keep answering your questions and bringing the path to enlightenment to a whole new bunch of people in the upcoming year. And you can donate at www.dailybuddhism.com/donate. And you can also check out on how the fund to drive is going and get the dollar amount given plus percentages at dailybuddhism.com/pledgedrive. That's pledge-drive. Of course, you can email me if you want to send a check, money order, or pay with some method other than PayPal. And now let's get on with this week's show. All right. Once in a while, I get more than one question on a single topic at the same time. What better way to know what needs to be covered? So now I'm going to read two questions before I give my answer. The first reader wrote in and asked, I've been practicing Buddhism for about 5 years, and I feel that this is truly my path, but I also have a strong desire to serve my country in the military, specifically the Army. Now, I realize that there are areas within the various branches of the military that don't require the taking of life or things of that nature. I also realize that regardless of my position in the Army, I will be in a position that places me a great deal closer to combat and the taking of life, either directly or indirectly. I am resolved not to take life under most circumstances, but there are several scenarios that I have recently meditated upon that I can say with relative certainty that I would shoot back. I don't believe that I could watch the deaths of my fellow soldiers and not fight to defend them, and this is my conflict. I truly feel that I was born to protect, but doing so could lead me closer to taking life. If I choose this path, I'm conflicted and was wondering what might be your view on the matter. The thoughts and comments from the other listeners would be greatly appreciated as well. And then a second reader asks, I struggle with the concept of nonviolence almost daily. As a rule, I agree with and understand the negativity of taking life and doing harm. I've really internalized the concept, and this has led to a spiritual conflict. The problem is, I am in a commissioning program to be an officer in the U.S. Army. I have been before I became interested in Buddhism, and in the foreseeable future, I will be in Afghanistan or Iraq, and will likely find myself in a situation where I will have to take another life to protect those around me. The internal argument goes like this. A. Get out. You don't want to take another life. It's negative and wrong. Even those who terrorize and kill deserve to live because they are deluded and ignorant. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. Or B. You have a duty to protect the lives of innocent people, even if it would do harm to yourself. Getting out for some ideal when there is real work to be done protecting people is cowardice. Okay, and my answer to both questions is that we did touch on this very topic way back in June. I strongly recommend reading the earlier post, including the comments that the readers added at that time. The link to the older show is in the show notes. But I have mixed thoughts on this topic. I had them back in June, and nothing has really changed. Basically, there is no flat-out correct answer to this. The first, most important precept says you should abstain from taking life. Okay, killing is wrong. But is killing always wrong? Some say that it is, some say that it sometimes can be justified. Usually if it's kill or be killed in a one-on-one situation, for example if you're being mugged, then Buddhism would tend to lean toward the be killed side of the equation. It's better to give up your own life than take someone else's, even if that someone else is a criminal. Now, that being said, it's sometimes considered acceptable to kill one person to save a larger group, but even then only in extreme circumstances. There's an ancient story about how Buddha, in a former life, killed a man to save a ship full of sailors. So if Buddha can get away with killing one to save many, then it's justifiable in certain circumstances. Now, the Dalai Lama has gone on record saying that he's against war of any kind. And his actions when Tibet was overrun in the 1950s prove that he meant it. He and his followers did not fight back and have lived in exile for 50 years. Now, I admit that my pessimistic or maybe realistic side has problems with this concept. If all Buddhists refuse to fight back, eventually the more aggressive groups would wipe out all the Buddhists. Pacifism in a war-torn world is not the best methods for survival. In the case of the Dalai Lama, he's been homeless for 50 years, and that's very likely not going to change. Essentially, he let the bad guys win. Now, as you can probably tell, I'm not quite sure what I think myself here. Nonviolence is to be advocated and desired. But in a realistic world, is it always possible? I honestly don't think it can be. And there were many reader responses on the website about this post, both agreeing with peace is good at all costs, and disagreeing, saying killing is justified in some cases. You really can go both ways on this one. I would suggest stopping on at the website and looking at some of those comments. They're very good this time.
Parikappitam
Anukampam upadaya
Patiganhatu uttama
And I'll bet you're wondering what that was. That was a track from the book and CD combination Sampujanam, Reverence to the Buddha, by Sri Aswath and Carl Scott, published by Mindflow Learning Systems. The book is 25 pages, and it includes a CD of chants. The cost is $16.95, and there's a link in the show notes to purchase it from the publisher. But many of the original texts of Buddhism are written in Sanskrit, so it's not uncommon for a Buddhist to learn the language. It's more than a little daunting getting started learning Pali or Sanskrit, but so many rituals involving recitations or chanting in Pali exist, even in modern times, that it's often worthwhile to learn. This little booklet and CD set are one way to learn one of the major rituals, the Sevenfold Buddha Puja. The booklet begins by describing how to perform the puja, or worship ceremony. A puja is just another word for worship ceremony, either alone or with a group. This section of the booklet is only 2 pages, but seems thorough enough to me. The next several pages are the Sanskrit version of the ritual. There's no explanation in this section about what the Sanskrit says or how to read it. This is not a how-to-read Sanskrit text. Most of the remainder of the book has the phonetic version of the spoken ritual on the left-hand page and the English translation on the right-hand page. You can do whichever version you want to do this ritual. The accompanying CD has the chants on it, and you can follow each track while reading the phonetic version in the book. You just heard some of that, and basically the whole CD is similar. Presumably, one can memorize the sounds and repeat the ritual after enough repetitions. The voices and chanting on the CD are clear and spoken slowly enough that following along in the booklet is easy. The book itself is small but does the job. If you can read the Sanskrit, that's great. But if not, the translation is there to help. Although the puja ritual is explained, there is no explanation on the meaning of the text, so you may want to do a little research on the sutras and chants outside the book on your own. My opinion is that the best use of the book in the CD set is to memorize the chanting, or perhaps get a little extra experience reading Sanskrit while listening to it being read aloud on the CD. If you want to learn to do a real puja in authentic Pali, then this might be worth picking up. And then we had another question from a reader. Question: I have a question about mindfulness. I try hard to be fully present in the moment and do whatever it is that I'm doing, whether listening to a coworker or walking the dog, etc. But here's my small problem. As a side job, I write and perform music, and the pressure to produce new material is pretty high. To meet the demand, I spend a lot of time off in la-la land, for lack of a better term, working on new song ideas or lyrics, and this strikes me as contrary to being present. Or is it that fully involving myself in creative thought is itself being mindful? I guess I'm confused. And my answer was to this. I don't see a problem with it. As you said, it's part of doing the job. So as long as you are aware that you are being in la-la land and doing it on purpose, then you are acting mindfully. Remember, with Zen, and Zazen meditation in particular, one of the goals is to clear your mind and be essentially thoughtless. If anything, your zoning out might even be considered a form of meditation. Something to think about or meditate on might be, why does your creative process work like this? Knowing yourself is important. You know how to be creative. See if you can figure out why it works like that. But don't worry about the process. You're aware that you're doing it, so embrace it and be creative when it's time to do so. And there were several comments on the website, but most of them pretty much agreed with what I said, so that was not terribly controversial. And then our koan for the week. Suiwo, the disciple of Hakuin, was a good teacher. During one summer seclusion period, a pupil came to him from a southern island of Japan. Suiwo gave him the problem: hear the sound of one hand. The pupil remained 3 years but could not pass this test. One night, he came in tears to Suiwo. "I must return south in shame and embarrassment," he said, "for I cannot solve my problem." "Wait 1 week more and meditate constantly," advised Suiwo. Still, no enlightenment came to the pupil. "Try for another week," said Suiwo. The pupil obeyed, but in vain. Still another week. Yet this was of no avail. In despair, the student begged to be released, but Suiwo requested another meditation of 5 days. They were without result. Then he said, "Meditate for 3 days longer. Then, if you fail to attain enlightenment, you had better kill yourself." On the second day, the pupil was enlightened. And that's the kind of koan I like. What does that mean? I have no idea. You read anything into that one. I guess you can reach enlightenment at any time if you just have the right incentive. But if you have some idea what they're talking about there, feel free, post it on the site. And then what turned out to be the big post for the week, a reader wrote in asking, "I'm wondering how much of the Buddhist mythology someone has to follow or believe in order to call themselves a Buddhist. For example, I don't believe in reincarnation or nirvana. However, I think the lifestyle Buddhism promotes leads to a healthy mind, a general sense of well-being, and happiness. A lot of what Alan Watts has to say is especially enlightening. I follow the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path as closely as I can and meditate daily. Am I a Buddhist?" And I wrote back, "First, not everyone is going to agree on what follows. It's only my opinion, and I absolutely invite dissent and debate in the comment area of the site. Technically, all mythology or magical stuff, such as deities, bodhisattvas, mysticisms, demons, the hundreds of Buddhas, etc., can be taken with a grain of salt if you prefer. There are many very enlightening stories that use these characters, so it's worthwhile to look at them and study. But there is no need to actually believe in any of them as literal fact. If you do believe in them, that's fine too, but I don't think it's required to be considered a Buddhist. Now, do not misunderstand me. Various denominations or sects of Buddhism do require certain beliefs. If you want to be a Tibetan Buddhist, there are certain things you need to accept. The same with Zen. The same with Pure Land. For example, if you don't believe in Amitabha Buddha, you probably don't qualify as a Pure Land Buddhist. But there are lots of ways to not qualify as a Tibetan or Zen practitioner also, for example. But you can still be called a Buddhist. Reincarnation or rebirth is a tough pill to swallow here in the West. Karma and samsara are necessarily tied in with this idea, and it's hard to accept or reject any of these without accepting or rejecting all three. Are these ideas necessary? The way I was taught to look at it is like this. All of these stories and ideas are here to help us along the path. Some of it is cultural baggage that is not required to follow the path and reach enlightenment. If some idea or concept causes you suffering, in the form of confusion, doubt, or conflict, then throw it out and take the rest. Now Buddha said, or so we're told, "Believe nothing, no matter where you read it, or who said it, no matter if I have said it, unless it agrees with your own reason and your own common sense." Now it would be hard, although still not impossible, to call yourself a Buddhist if you do not believe that the Buddha himself was real, but how much of what is attributed to him do you actually believe is up for debate. I do believe that he really came up with the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. He probably laid down the five precepts as well. I accept these as the bottom line foundation of Buddhism. What about all that other stuff? No, I don't know. And no one else can say for sure either. Did he come up with all those hundreds of rules for monks? All those Tibetan rituals? The techniques of meditation? Or the ideas of Pure Land? I don't believe that he did, though many will disagree with me. Much has been invented and attributed to the Buddha in the intervening years. But that doesn't mean that that information is useless or wrong, but it does mythologize the Buddha to the point where you just don't really know what he did or he didn't do. This is something you need to think about and meditate on yourself. But the bottom line, and I think most people would agree, Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, Five Precepts, are the foundations, the basics. If you believe in those, you're a Buddhist. And then, on the website, there were, I don't know, a couple dozen opinions on this one. This one really sparked some interest. There were many people who suggested that it's really just a label, and it doesn't matter. Whether you're a Buddhist or not, doesn't matter. It's just a word. Labels are bad. It brought up all kinds of things about self, no self, reality, illusion, labels, delusion, all these mental ideas that Buddhism has. I would very strongly recommend checking out the comments on that post. And that's all I have for you this week. That wraps up episode 45. If you have a question on any Buddhism-related topic, send in your questions by email to brian@dailybuddhism.com or phone them in 24 hours a day to our voicemail at 937-660-4949 or post your comments about anything that I've said in this show on the website at dailybuddhism.com. If you get a chance, stop by dailybuddhism.com/donate and put a little money in the fund drive. Again, if you do make a donation of $50 or more, you get a free subscription to the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine, where every week I collect and combine all the weekly Buddhism posts and put them in a nice printable PDF file, with a little additional information as well. So stop in there at dailybuddhism.com, and until then, I will see you next week.